Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And now, Hangar 56 Media presents Spike's Car Radio, a downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
Everybody, welcome to Spike's Car Radio Wednesday. It's good to be with you. We have a fantastic show. We are currently sitting out in Santa Monica Airport, Hangar 9, with none other than Jerry Seinfeld and some visitors who are here for the LA Auto Show from Germany. They're nicknamed Mr. GT and Mr. 911. Andy Pruniger and Dr. Frank Stefan Walliser. Hi, guys. This is so exciting to have you guys here. Jerry, thank you for flying out.
I did. I've
and helping us
I
here.
I was in New York. I said, I can't miss this.
Thank you so much for having us, yeah. Mike. And it's great. Well, a great experience to be here. Absolutely. We are totally blown away by the cars we saw already.
Yeah.
And by the atmosphere and everything.
We're showing them around some of the Seinfeld group. and it's a big thrill for me because I know these guys. Quite a few years at this point, over 10 years. We met, I think, on the same day. The 918 Mule and the 997 GT3 RS 0.2.
Exactly.
Had just come out.
It was in Weissach. I'll never forget the story because yeah. I wasn't on the schedule and I stole you away for 5 minutes and we went driving for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, oh my God, this whole schedule is
What year was that?
Up.
Was that 2011?
It must have been. I think it was a GT3 RS second generation 997. That is 2010.
4.0.
No.
It
was a 3.8.
It was a 3.8. The 997.2.
Yeah. And Jerry said, he didn't approach me because he had the first generation already, and that would be almost the same. I said, no, stop,
right.
we have to drive.
Yeah.
And on the way to the main gate, internally in Weissach, he already said, oh, this feels different. I have to have it. and grabbed his phone and made arrangement for the afternoon. That was
the beginning of how the cycle of insanity that these guys got us on, where you can't believe the new car could be any better.
Right.
And it always is. And you don't know how they did it, and you have to do it.
I'm just laughing. This is the three most obsessive Porsche guys. The detail you just were running over in that conference. No, 3.8 in a slice. This is going to be a fantastic hour of Porsche talk. Let's start with, why are you guys here? I'm guessing you flew in for the LA Auto Show, right? Is that correct?
That's correct. We have a new car that we're going to be presenting in a couple of days. Everybody knows it. We already communicated that there will be a GT4S, and we're looking very much forward to this possibility to have the world premiere here in Los Angeles. And to be perfectly frank, we're happy to be over here because after all this corona, It's the first time in 2 years that we were able to fly overseas and see our friends back in LA. And it's so wonderful to be here. And I have to confess, I like the weather as well, because it's more like summer today than it normally is.
It's beautiful great. And it's hot. Well, tell us about the car.
Yeah, as Andy said, reason number one is the presentation of the car, GT4 RS. In Porsche terms, everything explained then, because all our enthusiasts and customers know what it stands for. But I think the level of excitement this time is higher than ever. Then we really finally released it and said, okay, we do as much as we can for the Cayman and the 718. And with an RS, and in the long history of the Cayman so far, we never did an RS. So for the very first time, a normally aspirated engine, a high revving engine, and we can reveal it now. It will be the original GT3 engine, the 4-liter.
No difference, no detuning, nothing.
No detuning. Oh, really?
The same engine?
Full spec GT3 engine in a GT4.
Oh, my God.
9,000 RPM, dry sump lubrication, individual throttle bodies, all the works.
That you know, thing this is, individual throttle bodies thing, if
thing
we could just stop here for a second.
Everybody smile, I promise you.
You started talking about that with the Speedster, because that was the first car to get this engine. And everybody got very excited. There's certain terms, you know, in the car world that got car guys hear. They don't know what it means, but they like the way it sounds.
And then they repeat it. Yeah. Individual throttle bodies.
Individual throttle body. We have to get individual throttle. But you imagine like a Weber carburetor from 1963. There's no carburetors. There's no... We don't really know what individual throttle bodies are, but we like them.
It doesn't matter because you know how they work and they make the experience more exciting. They make the car rev faster. They make the car cleaner, which is a bonus as well.
And we have to be honest, that was the driver behind it. The question was how to fulfill emission regulations in the future with normally aspirated engines.
Right.
And then our pre-development, what we did over the years is that we have an idea on the position of the injectors to get the particle emissions under control. And then they came up with the idea of these single throttle bodies, means each cylinder gets an own throttle. So the car has, in total, the number of throttles is on the car. What is the equation? 6 cylinders, 7 throttles, because we have a main safety throttle. And this just changes the tumble in the cylinder, and with that we got a way better mixture between air and fuel, and that brought down the particle emission significantly. And that was really a huge thing. And positive, why investing the money? Because for sure the effort is a little bit higher. Means throttle response, what we are a little bit of addicted to, is way better. The air has a shorter way, gets in earlier, and so the response on the throttle is so much better. That is what you can feel.
On downshift especially, it's a huge difference. When you blip the car and shift down, it's going like a race car, as if the car had no inertia at all. And this is so much fun. And it's good. It's good for lap times as well, because the gear engages earlier. Wow.
Yeah.
F18 or F16?
Both.
You know what I think might be interesting, Spike, because having these two guys here, to us, it's like we don't care about the president. We don't care about who's on the Supreme Court. These are the guys who are the most important guys. They make a difference in
our
lives.
They do,
When they make a decision, it affects our lives. When the president does something, it doesn't affect us. When they make a decision, we know about it.
Yes, it's the only thing we're excited about.
But you know what? I would like to hear briefly how you guys got started with Porsche and... What were your early ambitions as young men? Mm-hmm. Is this what you wanted to do? And did you set out a plan? Here's how I'm going to get to that company. I'd like to hear how you guys started out.
That's an interesting question, because I think Frank and me, we started at about the same time, mm-hmm. Some 20 years ago. It was 25, yeah, well, time's running. And the funny thing is that to start with that, we weren't even the best friends by then. He was an intern, and he was so always nagging at people and being audacious and being being smart ass a little bit. and that changed over the years so much. I was studying mechanical engineering, and I always wanted to do something with cars. And so my father took me to Porsche Weissach when I was a young guy in the university, and that was the first time I entered Weissach Development Center, and I was so impressed by all that, what I saw. And I saw the first 964 all-wheel drive. It was jacked up on a lift, and I could see the drive shafts. I said, "Hey, this is an all-wheel drive 911." And the guy that hit pulled my arm and threw me away, and said, "No, you shouldn't look there."
Wow!
And when we were done with that, because my father was in the industry of selling scales for the wind tunnel, and that was the first wind tunnel that Weissach built in the 80s, and so that was my first entry. And since being there, I always wanted to work there, and so I concentrated all my studying and my striving for getting a job to getting a chance to work in Porsche in Weissach.
And what was your first job at Porsche?
I was selling engineering. I mean, I was sending CVs to Porsche all the time, like 7 or 8 or 9. And it was in the beginning of the 90s, and they didn't hire because they were laying off people. Business was not so good back then. And I had to wait a while to get my chance, and my chance was being a key account manager in the external engineering side, because Weissach in that time sold about 30% of their engineering capacity to the outside world, clandestinely, secretly.
Right,
so the customers, they didn't want that the public would get noticed that that there was a certain kind of engineering done not by them but by Porsche.
Right.
And for example, the Mercedes 500e, the Audi RS2, mm-hmm, even mm-hmm.
the Harley Davidson
V-Rod engine.
The what?
A V-Rod engine.
Oh, wow. The V-Rod, yeah.
The V-Rod was a project that was done in Weissach. Yeah. So I did that for 2 years, and as soon as I had my feet into Weissach, and I always tried to go to the car engineering sector. I was a sport driving school instructor by then, and had my first contact with a 996 GT3 and fell totally in love with it. Mm-hmm. But had so many ideas what could be done better on that car, because there were some things lacking in my point of view. And so I got to know Hartmut Christen, who was running the show in the motorsport back then, and then the rest is history.
Right.
There you go.
So, Frank, before you tell us how you started, a lot of your fans are wondering how the Honda 250 is coming along that you've been building on Instagram. We're watching, waiting for the startup video.
It really started. Maybe I should never have posted these photos. The pressure is obviously really rising, and it's still not finished, as it was a nice father and son project.
Right.
But we're still not happy how the engine is running. And
what's the problem? Tricky. What seems to be the problem?
I think the throttle body is probably. So we cannot program it with a computer. We have to look at the carburetor. It has also two throttle bodies.
Right.
And it's an air-cooled engine, so everything is nice.
And what year is it? 72?
It's 86, I think.
Oh, 86.
86.
Yeah, I loved those motorcycles in the mid-70s, all those Honda 350s and 450s. And
there it is.
There,
without the front wheel.
Well, show me.
Okay. I was a little thrown off by the camouflage look. I thought you were going to go back to like a totally original.
No, it was not totally original. It was a little bit fantasy
That's the same bike?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
The same bike.
That's hilarious.
Well, we will hang in there with this, and we can't wait for the next chapter.
Let me do an ad real quick. If you're looking for a car, especially one of the cars that these guys designed, you want to go to collectingcars.com. Collectingcars.com sells cars around the world.
Is that Chris Harris thing?
It is. Chris Harris is a part of it.
They've got an LA place here now. They've got a place out in Canada. They're all around the world. They're selling cars at auction to every place on earth. Right now, they have a 993 Carrera 4S up there. The latest in a string of incredible results, collectible cars, Porsches. This car, it actually sold for, this is a 993 Jerry Carrera 4S, sold for $270,000.
Wow. 270?
270.
What, 1,000 miles.
Oh, 1,000 miles. But
wow.
Still.
Wow, that's a pretty nice car.
Damn.
But that's a lot of money.
Yeah. They also have this McLaren here. 433-mile McLaren P1.
Can you believe that?
That they just
People
sold.
Who drive the cars.
Oh, no, that's up for sale right now. Sensational supercar, virtually as new condition, McLaren P1, a collecting cars, is offered for the first time by its first owner, having covered only 433 miles.
Oh, God. P1. I always say, if you get to heaven and you're the guy with the lowest mileage Porsche, you lose. You lose!
You lose! Well, if you want to buy that car, you can win! Go
first
to collect.
I'm afraid of this one, I'm sure.
Yeah. P1. And then they have this cool bobber here. Look at that. A Triumph Bonneville. Custom job. Kind of like your wow. motorcycle that we were just talking about.
Really. Well,
yours is better. This one starts, Frank.
That's cool.
Anyway, you're looking for something cool. No ordinary auctions, no ordinary cars. Go to collectingcars.com. Why sell your car anywhere else? Sign up. They have a great newsletter. They'll send you stuff. All right, let's still drill down on what's really going on here. I know we didn't hear your origin story,
yeah, let's
you grew up
you
in Stuttgart, right?
Yeah, so originally born in Stuttgart, and I grew up in...
We covet what we see.
Grew up in Pfullingen. That's unknown, but... 40 kilometers south of Stuttgart.
But were you seeing these cars as a kid? And
no, not at all. My parents told me that my first word was car, for whatever reason. They complained a little bit that it was not my
right.
dad. But in general, obviously, I was addicted to cars.
Mm-hmm.
From day number one, for whatever reason, I do not know.
Wait, let's stop there because that interests me. What is it about the car that is so addictive? What is the experience of driving a responsive car that stimulates the brain in this unique way if you're genetically a car person?
For me, it gives you feedback, and it gives you feedback on all the senses. You can hear it, you can smell it, you can feel the acceleration, the braking. You are involved with it. I think you can share the passion because it has a passenger seat, mm-hmm. or you can take the kids with you. It's the visual is, I think, extremely important, mm-hmm. how it looks.
Mm-hmm.
The car appeals you. You like it or you dislike it, whatever, depending on the car. Yeah.
It can change your mood.
It's
I was telling Jerry, this car changed my mood this morning.
Yes. Yes.
I was on an open highway listening to the Beatles with the sunroof open, and I went from tired and sad to happy in a minute.
In an 83 911 SC.
Yeah, yeah. Just a moment. Came out of nowhere.
These cars are healthy. They make people healthy. And I'm a firm believer in
yeah.
that. Because I'm like you. It changes my mood from low to highest.
Right.
Being in
right.
control. Feeling the car's movement, being able to control it at the edge, yeah? And getting so much information through the hand, through my ears, through my bum, through mm-hmm. the seat rails, everything. That's why a seat's so important in a car. And it is this intimacy with a machine that makes you feel like being part of a machine, and not only the user, but being an integral part of the thing that is moving. You control the energy that car is bringing to the streets. Mm-hmm. And this never get I'm never getting tired of this mm-hmm. never. That's why it's so important to keep the feeling in the car, to keep the character, mm-hmm. to keep mm-hmm. some rough edges, because the car has to have a character as well. It has to be a little bit like a human being, and I consider my GT cars mostly a little bit like I like to talk with them. I don't mm-hmm. do it. I don't talk to them, but it feels like when I'm driving. And
Hello.
What Frank said is very important. I mean, I like to really turn around when I left the car and just look at it again
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
I like the experience so much. I even pet it sometimes on the roof.
That's the video I want to see. Andy Pruniger talks to a car.
Hello, my friend.
Do you like the older technology? Do you enjoy driving older cars?
I do. I have a 993 myself. I'm not a collector, so I'm lacking the garage space. But
I heard that both of you have a 993.
We have both a black 993 convertible, yes.
Oh, wow.
How did that happen?
By incident. Why that car? 993 was the Porsche that was the hero car when I joined the company.
Ah. Exactly.
And this is for most. If we talk to our colleagues, and they say I'm a 964 guy. You say, you started a little bit earlier than me in the company. Then you have the others. They want a 911 SC, and they you will retire.
I was at Porsche in '94. Was the first time I visited, and Wendelin Wiedeking was the CEO at the time, and there was a 993 under a drape under, and he said, do you want to see the new 911? I said, okay, yeah. And he pulled the thing off, and I got to see it for the first time. That was really exciting. Wow.
What do you think? What did you think back then? Because it lacked a torpedo like headlights. And
I wasn't as deep into it then as I am now.
Okay.
And I just thought, it's the same but better. It seemed more modern. It wasn't as big a departure as the 996 was. I went with my friend James Spader, the actor, who's also a Porsche guy.
Blacklist.
We went to a customer focus group thing down in Irvine in 2000, or maybe it was 99, with the 996. And he's a 73 RS guy. And we drove down in my 73 RS, and the faces were so sad driving home. We did not like the direction that car, when it went in, you know, it felt like it lost the, what's the word? It's not just simplicity. It became too modern. It lost a purposeful vibe. 911s should feel like they have a purpose.
Exactly.
You know, a sports car should feel like this is for something, to do something. And that car seemed like it was meant to appeal to a broader market, which it was.
That was the idea behind the car.
Yeah, yeah.
which saved the company, by the way.
It saved the company.
Not as much as the Cayenne did. The Cayenne is the greatest car.
But it did not save the company, but it put us in another dimension.
Yeah.
So the company went way bigger, more stable, depending not on a single or on two sports car model lines. Complete different target group, and expanding. Porsche got more, everyday usability, what was always something very important for Porsche. But this time it was for sure. If you have an SUV, it's really day-to-day usability. Put the company in another dimension, and then we could expand it, doing more model lines over the years. That was maybe also the biggest venture within Porsche, to make the step with the Cayenne.
Right.
Because it was all in. If it would have failed, done.
Right.
Definitely. Wow.
But coming back to your point, Jerry, about the feeling, the intimacy of a car, the purposefulness.
Right.
This is, I think, the challenge that Frank and me are facing every day.
Right.
To keep that alive in a today modern car without getting too old school. You have to go with the times, or you go in time. This is a saying; it's a little bit bad translation, but I think this is very important that we keep the feeling side up, keep the emotion high in the cars.
And how far out is your product cycle now? Like, this is 20, we're the end of 21 now. It's November. Are you working on cars for 25 and 26? Is that where you guys are?
Normally, the planning is what we oversee is 10 years, knowing 10 years. Everything will change. All plans will be completely different than we consider it now. That's why not bother too much about what will happen in 10 years. On the other hand, for sure, we see the whole automotive world in a transition. What makes it really difficult, because it's a lot of money in the game, to put it on the right technology and the right products. We are working on products normally 5 years in advance.
Five years. So when you guys go to the board, With do you go together to tell this is what we want to do next? Do you guys?
Yeah. No. Well, first of all, is there a board with all of these great things on them, like well, sure. bars?
No, and I mean the supervisory board.
Oh, the fellas.
Is it like Flashdance where you have to go in and
and make a presentation?
Yeah. For sure.
Are you sweaty?
Sure.
You walk in.
Sure. It's Flashdance all over again because we need the funds. We need the funds.
It's Flashdance all over again.
Do they ever say no to something you want to do?
Sometimes, but
let me say, sometimes it takes a while to convince everybody, and it's not. It's I think, you know, I said it's a lot of money behind it. It's a lot of huge investments. We have a factory, and we have to take care on this factory that people have work, that they have enough products, that we have enough cars every year to use the production facility, and there is. For sure, a huge planning process ongoing and rolling. And we are once a month in our product committee. It's not only the board members, it's also some colleagues from production, sales, marketing, and so on. And then we do all the product decisions. It's a demanding process because it needs a lot of preparation for all the model lines, all the details, all the options. And then we do the presentations on the cars. We have different milestones. We go milestone by milestone, starting from a product mission, saying, well, this is our general idea. This is the number of cars we are looking for. This is the pricing, performance, and everything around. And for sure, then you have a lot of products in the company, and they're sometimes also in competition. You mentioned the Cayenne. Cayenne is always... good ideas, and we all always know production numbers and so will be higher than if we are coming with a small product variant of a 911. And this has to be nicely kept in balance, and that's why sometimes we receive a no or are you sure?
Not because they don't want the product, because we have one product line. Everybody has to fit in the cycle.
Right.
We have to normally fit the cycle more plan. Ideas than possibilities.
We have the production and so on. And for sure, you have to finance it and fund everything. This has also to be considered. And that's why it's not an easygoing project. It's not why people say they are coming, showing up again. And that's why it's really a hard job what we are working in to prepare everything that is so convincing that the colleagues and the board members
just
they agree
say no.
And say, that's convincing. You can go for it. And without going too much into details, GT4 RS took a while.
To
really convince everybody as well. Yeah,
and say, okay, are you sure? Can we go with another engine? I said, no, we want it exactly like this, and we have, and it will be the noise of the car will be completely different, and we have some really cool ideas and so on.
But not to put it on a negative side, which I think there's very rare that we can't really do convince somebody of a good idea that is essential for the product line. It takes some time. Sometimes you need the right point in time, maybe to suggest such a project, but at the end of the day, we were pretty happy with the results so far. Because
and sometimes it's healthy. You get the feedback, then you go mm-hmm. back and say, what can we improve? Do we have another idea? And
sometimes
whatever.
It's not healthy though, is it? And then you go back to your room and stew for a while, get angry. Who sits on the throne? Who is at the head of the table of that conversation?
Oliver Blume. Our CEO. All the board members are in. Yeah. But it's really, I have to say, within Porsche, this is really a management team. Yeah. It's not that a single guy says, this is the decision, I will decide it. It's always backed on the team because you need everybody on the table.
There's a lot to be thankful for, and that's how Policy Genius can check if you're paying too much for home and auto insurance. It's Thanksgiving. We got mashed potato stuff and cranberry sauce from a can. There's a lot on your plate this November, so why not let Policy Genius help you by looking for lower home auto insurance rates for you? Did you just say, oh, my God?
Mashed potatoes? I got the most important car guys in the world, and you're talking about mashed potatoes?
I told you I had to do three ads.
Everybody, this is a good time to take a little break, have a little sip while I read the ad. While your holiday calendar starts filling up, let the folks at Policy Genius get your home and auto insurance shopping done faster than you can say, why do we still have daylight savings? It's never a bad time to find ways to bundle your home and auto insurance and save with Policy Genius. They've saved customers.
Why do we still have daylight savings? What is the reason?
You know, every year, right at daylight savings, there's a slew of articles that come out that say why. And I think it's just all guys who don't want to set the clocks in their house.
Right.
They're just tired of doing that Saturday night, going to every single clock in the house and having to change
it. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have to do it.
Sounds like a
smart home. No. They've saved their customers an average of $1,250 per year over what they were paying for home and auto. They've saved new customers an average of $435 per year on auto insurance. They've saved new customers an average of $350 per year on home insurance. PolicyGenius.com. You just go to PolicyGenius.com, answer a few quick questions. I've done it. It's fantastic. You save some money. Lots of quotes.
I took Andreas Pruninger for a ride in my 49 Gemund a few moments ago. You've never been in a Gemund.
No. That was the first time, and I'm so thankful because that
wasn't
was
an incredible
experience.
Yes.
Incredible.
And isn't that funny? Like, you think, like, these guys have driven everything, right?
Right.
They
you
come from the
that.
Place.
Yeah.
You assume that.
Yeah.
And they haven't.
No. But how about, Andreas, the essential Porsche experience in that car that remains today?
I think driving that car, you immediately are reminded of what kind of car you're sitting in. It feels Porsche.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing that struck me, because the slack in the steering is non-existent.
Yeah.
The throw of the gear lever is short and it's crisp. The sound of the engine is in the cabin.
Yeah.
And there's this smell that I love.
Yeah.
The smell that
you're comfortable.
Smell. Yeah,
the smell is a very important part of the Porsche experience.
Yes. Smell and color.
Do you ever consider that when you're engineering these cars?
Yeah, for sure. Smell is...
You do?
Smell. The problem is, smell is for sure also a part of modern car engineering, but you try to avoid anything that smells strange.
Right. And so how do you do that?
Very subjective.
Yeah, it's very subjective. You have the material in, you have a glass, you open it, then you smell, then you close it again.
Really?
And then you need something to neutralize. It's like a perfume. We have some experts. They're really in that.
Nose experts.
And I know my kids, if I get a new car, they really hate it because they say, I can smell the leather and everything. We love.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, that's cool. It's a new
but
car.
But the Japanese market does not, I have read.
And it really depends on the different noses and what people like and what they combine with this smell. I love this. I think it you can smell the leather.
What's your favorite variant smell, Jerry?
Favorite smelling car?
Yeah, favorite smelling
911S.
I would go with 993. There's nothing like a 98 C2S smell.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
I agree on the 993 because it's a very typical Porsche smell.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how it where it does
this
come
is great.
From.
But I think the 993.
You can smell it.
The 964 and the 993, I would like to test that blindfolded. I don't think you can take them apart.
Oh, I could. Yeah, I definitely could. That's, yes.
Yeah?
We could do it today.
My nose is not that good.
Maybe I've got an early 993. Maybe that's why.
I bet you could.
Comedians in cars are smelling
911s. Coffee, yeah.
But how funny is that?
That's true, right?
That's something I didn't know this.
Car.
That smell is a part of the production.
I would love to be tested. Are you in right now? Just by smell. I'd love to get a blindfold, silver dollars on the eyes.
Have you ever considered adding a vintage smell to a modern car?
That's a great question.
No, we always said we don't do active smelling. Like you find cars today, they have an active smelling part or even a perfume that can be activated by the air condition.
Right, Mercedes.
We never considered it, but we have markets that ask for that, so maybe one time in the future.
That's funny.
But I have
maybe
this
not
very
in a 911.
Strong feeling that a smell in a car should be genuine.
Yes.
It shouldn't be like
fully agree.
Somehow artificial or same thing like sound coming from the loudspeakers and pretending to be an engine. I mean, it should be honest. And
but Mercedes, they have now. You can adjust the smell, right?
Well,
yes, right.
Yeah,
right.
That's weird.
There's a little ampule sometimes in the glove, and all you think about is it's going to tip over, and then it's going to stink. It won't,
but it's market. Sometimes you try. Not everything from the 80s survived, so we'll see what
It's so the thing about that car, to go back to the Gamund, is they did a book on that car, and I wrote this introduction to the book, and I spent a lot of time on it. And I felt like the essence of that idea is almost an aquatic shape. It's a shape that would move through water, and that before these guys came along, it was Porsche that enabled us to skim across the planet like a smooth rock on a glass pond. It was the first car that you could do that.
Yeah.
And that's the essence of Porsche to me, to skim across the surface of the planet like a smooth rock.
Smelling all the way.
Smelling all the way.
You have to keep the windows rolled up in order to leave the smell in the car, and right. It gets lost on the way. No, great experience, really. I'm still.
And they sat.
Awe.
They also both sat in my 908/3, the 1970 Targa Florio winner, which is this is my favorite car that I have. I think one of the greatest Porsches ever. Also, the essence of the philosophy of a minimalist, durable, maneuverable, the absolute minimum. And these guys are big, but they're thin. That's the other thing we want to know about you guys. You two guys and Maurer, do they ever weigh you guys to make sure that you're stay thin? Do they really want thin guys at Porsche?
Is there a weigh-in?
Is there a weigh-in at any point?
Yeah, no, we have
guys. There's nobody in America as thin as you guys.
Yeah.
Nobody.
What's happening?
We have these key performance indicators in the company, and so maybe that's also part of it. I was not aware.
The driver weight adds to the whole weight of the car. So
yeah. Well, we like to say that about you, Andy.
But they make us work so hard. So
do you remember our famous conversation at Road Atlanta when we were talking about the possibility of a 911R, and Jerry and I and Paul Zuckerman had talked about how much weight we'd want to pull out of a GT3. And I said 200 pounds, and you got a little angry with me, and they said, this is not you, but this is what I tell Americans. Why don't you lose 100 pounds? That is one of our favorite jokes.
Oh,
that's
oh my
favorite
God.
Quote of yours.
Sometimes you I should keep my mouth shut better.
It's such a great quote.
Yeah.
If you want to pull some weight out, pull it off yourself. That's a true comedian.
But it's definitely, you have more fun to buy a lightweight car than to lose these 50 pounds.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the positive on it, and that's part of our business.
Let me do one more ad.
We don't have to do any after this. I want to talk about the next hypercar, and I know they can't even talk about it.
But that's what I wanted to get to. That's what I want to get to.
Now.
Let me do this
do
ad, and then we're done.
Okay.
And then I have some...
And then maybe we'll turn it off.
I still have to tell my story.
Oh, that's right. You haven't told your origin stories. So the Spider-Man, the first movie, always has to be an origin story.
1 hour is not enough for you.
What's that?
That's the
test. Oh, we're not even close to being done. But if I get this done, then
that's it. All right.
And you won't want to listen to this, Jerry. Ho, 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 gentlemen. The holidays came early here at Manscaped, the leading men's hygiene brand.
This is the male groin shaving equipment. If you want to lose even the maximum amount of weight.
Yes.
You've got to get rid of all the hairs. Every gram counts.
And you can do it with Manscaped because they've just launched new products, including their all-new ultra-premium body wash and a 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner. It's time to give yourself or someone who needs it a gift of beautiful skin, hair, and balls this holiday season. Go to manscaped.com and use code SPIKE20 for 20% off and free shipping. SPIKE20, the lawnmower 4.0. That's the thing. I got you one of those, right, Jerry?
I haven't opened the box yet, but thank you.
But you we all love the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0, especially that lawnmower 4.0 with its own light, and it's got deodorants, anti-chafing materials, moisturizers.
Have you heard of this type of product?
No.
Yeah. No,
it's real.
It's just a little, you know, we talked about it on the show. We wrote an episode about it. In fact, you famously had shaved your chest. There was a time when men didn't talk about this, Jerry.
That was a joke. Well, in the 90s. Now everybody does it.
Now it's a company.
Yeah.
Now it's a multi-million dollar company.
But guys,
company.
Let's face facts. You have to do it. I mean...
You have to
yes.
do it. That's right.
We're not living in the 70s anymore.
No, we have to clean up.
There you go. You've heard it from all
three guests. Go to manscaped.com, use code SPIKE20, manscaped.com, SPIKE20, 20% off. All right.
Okay, so
let's get down to the real questions, Jerry.
Since they, you guys can't even, don't even talk, because you're not allowed to talk about the next hypercar. Let us discuss what it will be.
Okay. Well, we, this was, you know, something we've been talking about for a while is where is this next Halo car it's referred to, right?
Right.
We had the Carrera GT, we had the 918, and we're a little late on this next
thing. Are we? Why? Is it like every 10 years about?
About every 10 years,
You know what's weird? The weirdest thing about it is there seems to be like this coordination with Porsche, Ferrari, and McLaren. Let's all do it simultaneously.
Right, right. Well, they're one up.
They didn't
each
do
other.
That. They did it with the Carrera GT and the
918.
No, what was the Ferrari? It was the
Enzo.
The Enzo. And then the 918, there was the three cars.
Yes.
And the F40 was the 959.
Right. Right.
McLaren,
so
McLaren
that
did not exist.
That gets coordinated because everybody knows what everybody's doing.
I think Ferrari gets wind of Porsche's doing something, and they are a little bit quicker because they cut some corners, and maybe then the car is at the same time.
Joking.
But we have talked about this. That I believe this car needs to be an all-electric performance.
Well, there is no other option.
There's no other option the 918, which was a home run. Was a plug-in hybrid, right?
Right.
Carrera GT, naturally aspirated, not so Formula One engine thing. It only makes sense that this new thing, for it to be relevant to what's going on in the world right now, it would have to be.
It would have to be an all-electric, because that would
aerodynamic.
Be the, that's the only way they could say we're going to the next.
Right.
Technological place
look
that's
at them.
Possible.
Look, no expression.
They're just looking around.
Pretending.
Yeah. They're like your dog when you brush up against the leash hanging over the doorknob and the head just turns.
But okay, well, let's get into something I think you can talk about because there was some confusion here. You're also Mr. 718. And this 718 platform announcement that it would be all electric. Was that a Porsche announcement? That in the future, the 17 would only be...
Is that official yet?
No.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
So that's more...
No official statement.
Right. Well, everybody thinks that.
Okay. We can't do that. Well, you have five new models that you're announcing at the LA Auto Show. We now know there's a GT4 RS. What are the other ones?
It's a race-going track sibling of the GT4 RS, the club sport version, which is the successor...
That's going to be there, too.
That's going to be there, too, side by side, which because... They were developed in synchronicity, I would say. So there's always this symbiosis between a motorsport product and a street product, and that makes that has huge advantages. So this is the second one.
Is that the one with the hemp doors?
It hemp uses doors? A lot of natural fibers
natural,
instead of
natural
carbon fibers. Fiber. Yeah,
hemp. Natural fiber doors.
That's where motorsport is, again, a driver in technology, trying something, small volume, that still works, even if people sometimes do not believe it. And this is not a marketing exercise. This is true. It's technology. It's trying. It's takeover. For sure, we are talking on where can we use that in a future GT car.
Yeah.
Does it make sense? Where is it useful? And show it. And that's a driver.
I imagine.
Very healthy and very helpful.
Cheaper than carbon fiber, obviously. But what else? Why is hemp an advantage over carbon fiber?
Not yet, but maybe it will be in the future.
Yeah, price-wise, it's not so easy because carbon fiber in high numbers. You have to do all the R&D work, and then you do 100 doors. So there's this... It's the driver is not really the price. There you have more freedom in racing products. But it's thinking on CO2 footprint. What will you do with if you crash the door and you have to scrap it? What is the impact? And so on. These things are also drivers. And motorsport is also going in this direction, looking for a greener motorsport. That's also the background of our fuel initiative. Also to consider, have a wider scope on the whole product, especially on CO2 reduction, for sure. This is driving the automotive industry these days.
I wanted to touch on this.
Did I tell my story so far? No.
Okay, go ahead. You want to do that before?
Yes, I want to hear
origin,
that.
Okay, go ahead. Origin.
Tell us your
you were born
story.
In Stuttgart.
But you've really set it up now. It better be good.
Don't leave out the intern part, please.
There is only the intern part. No, I would say you asked for a plan. Was there a plan? Maybe there was a dream. And I was 16, thinking on what could be my next steps and being in school. I thought it would be really cool to be within Porsche, because if there is an automotive crisis, they have this engineering service. That was my thinking with 16, because this was famous, Porsche Ford. It was also engineering service. And my thinking was, okay, if you join a company like this, you could be safe, because they do the cars, what I love. But if cars are not running that well, they have the engineering service, what's also interesting. And from this point, I said, okay, what will be the next step? So I went to a German technical gymnasium. So that was a technically driven school. Did my exams there and studied mechanical engineering, because this was the path to go there. And then what was Andy already pointing out, I applied for an internship. That was mid-90s, end of 94, still German industry, a little bit of crisis mode. Was not easy to get a job at all. And so I had several offers. One was for a consulting office. That was, from the paper side, definitely the best offer. Seeing different industries and being a consultant and everything. So I said, this is really interesting. I made a nice pattern and judged everything. And then I had Porsche. The offer was okay, and so the paper said I have to apply for this consultant office, but my gut feeling said no, I don't do it. So I called Porsche and they said, yeah, you can come. And
you can come.
I had
just come on over.
They invited me for a talk with the HR department. And And I said, yeah, I want to do this internship, and then I want to do my thesis there, and then I want to do my PhD with you, and then I want to work with you. And then the lady smiled at me and said, okay, you can start with the intern address. We will see.
Wow.
I met her a couple of years ago and said, I was right. Yeah, and it started with an internship in the engine department.
Uh-huh.
And
how did you get the 918 assignment? That's what really changed your life.
Yeah, definitely. This was
almost ended it.
Why?
The true story of it was I was between 2003 and 2007 in the motorsport department. I did strategy and project management. The outcome was the RS Spider project, where we went several times to the board and tried to convince Mr. Wiedeking on racing, what was not so easy these days. But finally, we could convince him with the Spider program.
Right.
And when this was done, I was looking for the next job opportunity and was in the streetcar development. I was in the electric electronic department. I did wiring harness and batteries and all about this. And then came this. And remember the days, it was 2009, was the whole Volkswagen Porsche story went a little bit in another direction. So we had been part of the Volkswagen group by the end of 2009. So I have to say the company and everything was a little bit down. And it was very important that we had an outlook. Where will be the future of Porsche? What will be our characteristics and how we can survive? And will we find our role in this new environment and everything? Then showed up the 918. And it was also, with the financial crisis in the background, a lot of discussions if sports cars and CO2 reduction, everything was around, will there be an outlook for a sports car ever in the future? Because a lot of things went down, that there's no money, environmental and impact, and so on. We see there will be an end of the sports cars. And then the 918 Spider concept showed up with a hybrid. And
what do you mean showed up?
In Geneva, when we showed the prototype, and I was not really involved in the prototype development or the show car development, but a colleague of me was running that, and he borrowed a battery from me and said,
I asked him, where do you need the battery for? He said, I will not tell you. I said, hey, guy, I know you. We are working here for 15 years in the company, and you will not tell me for the purpose of this battery? No, I will not tell you. I said, you are nice. So I gave him the battery. So means a hybrid battery, big thing. And then in Geneva, the car was shown, and I was totally thrilled, because for me it was really clear, okay, this is an Outlook, this is a technology carrier and everything, and really exciting, and carrying motorsport technology, and having the latest in electric electronics, and plug-in hybrid drivetrain and everything. So very cool statement. I was really, really thrilled on that. And so the months went on after Geneva, and it was not a final decision. It was prepared for the supervisory board to make this car. At the same time, the decisions for the Macan had been in preparation, because the Macan would have also be the next extension of Porsche. And so honestly, I went to the R&D board member one day and said, if you're looking for a project manager, I will do it.
Uh-huh.
And he was smiling at me again, so I had this sometimes.
He said, yes, you can come.
You may come.
That's how the Germans tell you, you just won.
But how, can I just ask, just not knowing...
A couple of days later, he confirmed me and said, yeah, I talked to the board, it's okay. And then Matthias Müller came in the company.
Right.
So we had also this change, and before they finally confirmed, I had to go to Matthias. And it was interesting, a very short interview with him. Very interesting, because he was only asking one question. Do you fear this project?
Fear it?
Yeah. I said, no, but I have the highest respect for it. I said, okay, you can go.
Wow, interesting.
Yes, you can come.
It's interesting.
Do you fear it?
Yeah. And
that is a good question. True. It's a very good question.
It changed a lot, because being responsible for the project, that was... honestly not easy. Andy was sometimes,
I mean, I had
because we were working in the same,
I had the
same
outside
area
view, and I really didn't envy you, definitely, when all the cars coming back with oil stains and the sound, and some of it was broken, and it was I mean,
it was,
there's
really
not
tough.
A lot of I really have to say that there's not a lot of people in the world that could have got that project right.
And
Frank definitely
and made it work,
absolutely,
and made it work respect. I still drive mine all the time, and I'm always impressed with how well it works. And it was the first time doing something like that.
When I was driving it the first time, Frank might remember, and Spain, I was in doubt of something like that.
Test drive in Spain.
It was in Spain. No, I remember a drive around Weissach, which I had the car for like a day or so. And I can remember being so completely off. I was so astounded by what that car could do.
Yeah.
I was so in awe what the technology in that car offers you as a driver. Mm-hmm. I wrote a text or a mail to Frank, which was like poetic.
And I was
using the most superlative words I could dig up with, and thanking him and said, this is really something that hasn't been there before.
Yeah.
I'm completely off the socks.
Yeah, yeah.
And different. And you as a customer at first were a little thrown off by it.
I remember when I went to the first, there was a product thing.
We invited some customers, because the response from the markets was not that everybody said, okay, here's our down payment.
Yeah.
Very easy, I take it. It was not like that.
Yeah, it wasn't.
The woman talked for an hour... about all the technology. Is there any questions? And I said, so it's $1 million to get good gas mileage?
But like any new technology.
But you save a lot of money on fuel.
Yeah.
And fuel's getting more expensive every year. So
no, I broke even since then. Yeah.
But like any new technology, it's sometimes a hard pill to swallow, but then in the years that follow, you realize, oh, these guys were ahead of me. These guys were ahead of me.
Yeah,
right?
And to me, it's as a Porsche crazy person, it's an experiential technology in that, you know, when we come down PCH sometimes, I turn the engine off and you listen to the waves and you feel the air and it's like you're in a sailboat.
Yeah.
And they take the top off. There's no car that it is a unique driving experience. And I still haven't transitioned to the electric mindset Spike has. He believes in it, and he feels like that is the future of the great cars. I'm not quite there yet. But that car, I absolutely love it, and I drive it all the time.
And where are you guys with electric? Because that's a natural endpoint to my next question. As we, you know, hear all these manufacturers making big pronouncements that we're going to transition to only electric cars and certain models are becoming only electric, what's Porsche's thought on that? Where are you headed?
Let me make one last remark on that hybrid technology that also makes maybe a bridge on the electric future of the car in general. In these days, when we did a presentation of the 918, a hybrid was a, sorry for the speech, a boring Japanese car,
right,
to go with low mileage, mm-hmm, from A to B.
Right.
Engineering wise, really great work, but not really a car for enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. Hybrid technology was not, let me say, sexy at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With the introduction of the 918 Spider and with the Nürburgring lap times we achieved and, mm-hmm, performance of the car and everything, after 3 years, the mindset really of the automotive, of the fans and everything, really changed. Because then they said,
yes,
the record on Nürburgring is unfair because it's a hybrid. It's what? It's unfair. and that really changed the mindset for this technology completely, because all for a sudden it was not only low mileage, it was a good mileage on the fuel. It was also high performance.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then we brought this to all the other model lines, like for the Cayennes and the Panameras. And all for a sudden, we have a market share of 60-70% of hybrids in a Panamera, depending on the market, a little bit of regulations and everything. But this was the real achievement in having, showing the capabilities of the technology. And that's why the supercar was so important on that time.
Mm-hmm.
It did not save the company, but it really made a big step on the technology, mm-hmm, side.
And so now, the electric future. I was really rooting for hydrogen for many years. I still am. I think it's interesting technology, but it seems like it's been abandoned as an idea.
We have to look at the... number one, it must be solved globally. It does not make sense to have it country by country solution. We need a global solution.
Right.
That's why it's so important on all the markets and all the countries to work together on common solutions, what I'm very convinced on. And then we have to split on what's new cars technology and what we are doing with the existing fleet, because we have around 1,300 million up to 1,500 million, dependent on the reports. Is the number of cars worldwide. And they, you know, they are made, every new car is better than ever. They last very long. And we also invested already CO2 in these cars. So we should use them and not scrap them too early, because every new car needs new energy you have to put in. So that's why we have a strategy going two paths. One is the synthetic fuel side, because we say there is an existing fleet and, mm-hmm, there will be applications that will need fuel in the next 15, 20, 30 years. Planes, ships, and certain cars also. And we have an existing fleet. So even if we produce a lot of, if we are talking I'm talking car industry, a lot of electric cars in the next 20 years, or only electric cars, it will only be... in the next 10 years, around 20 to 25% of the worldwide fleet. So we have to look for these 80 to 75% of the fleet. That's why we are driving synthetic fuels. And again, using motorsport as a provider, small volume, making experiences, and then scale it up.
Is there going to be a synthetic fuel gas station that I can go to? Like, where do I get synthetic fuel?
Chile. You have to go to Chile, yeah.
Okay. I mean, what I mean, right? What I love about an electric car is I charge it up in my garage, and then I'm out in the world.
Yeah.
And there's hydrogen, you know, Toyotas running around, and there's one place on the west side of L.A. here, and you got to get there to get your hydrogen, whatever
it is. The thing is, if you consider the worldwide, let me call it fuel lake, it does not really matter where you burn the fuel, because CO2 is global. If you produce it in Chile and you burn it in South America and you have credits and certificates that you trade. It doesn't matter if you burn it in your car or if the total amount of synthetic fuels in the fuel that is burned worldwide is raising in the numbers.
But where do I get it?
At the moment, not. It's research.
Oh, yeah, it's just research.
If it's available, you get it from every gas station because
then
it's
just fuel.
You can use the infrastructure that is already there.
So it's an existing infrastructure.
It's just a replacement. It's a little bit like the bio-based, or it's the same CO2 reduction idea than the bio-based fuels, but it's coming from hydrogen. Hydrogen has the transport and storage problem. If you have a liquid fuel, it's easy to handle. You have all the infrastructure. You can use it in every car, and it brings down the CO2 emission. It brings also a little bit down particles and NOx, but this is a side effect, a positive one. It does not get worse. So this is the idea behind that. Looking on the new car business, just by regulations, depending on the countries, we have seen the results of Glasgow. More and more countries will ban internal combustion engines by what we expect 2035. That will be the tipping point where it then really changes. And so there will come more electric cars. And I think we have shown with the Taycan that we can do a very performant, very entertaining car, also as an electric car. But the engineering effort and all we talked before on what is so special on the car, the look and how does it touch you, for sure you lose one of the senses. This is definitely the interaction from the engine. And this doesn't make it easier. Means all the others must be better. The cars must be appealing. They must touch you. The driving experience must be very, very unique. That's the challenge for the future.
And I think what we feel at Porsche, there's no black and white thing. I mean, it's not like you only have to have electric cars in the future, because as we are doing it right now, I mean, right here, take LA Auto Show as an example. We have the world premiere of a very, very high performance, analog, puristic combustion engine car.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, we are showing off the first GTS Taycan model, which is all electric.
Uh-huh.
So it is. I think there's so many garages, especially here in California, where there's a Taycan sitting right next to a GT3 RS.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't think we have to have a strategy as a company to only go one way.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do all the range and do it good, because we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
We are very good in making combustion engines very clean, very efficient, very emotional. And now we found a way and experience to do the same thing on the electrical side as well. So let the customer choose. It's always good to have choices, but we won't give up one for the other.
Mm-hmm. And we also are happy if the customers buy both of them, so no problem.
All right.
That's quite a show.
That was a great show.
That's quite a show.
Is it over already?
Yeah. It can be. It cannot be.
I think we have squeezed these guys as far as they want to go. Unless they want to tell us about the new hypercar.
Yeah, I mean, the audience, you know, I know you guys, you're saying, well, why aren't you asking about the 911 ST, the 73 RS anniversary? Why aren't you asking about any of the special? Because they're not going to answer those questions. They're not going to answer them. They're just looking at us smiling and blushing right now. But I don't know. Johnny Lieberman and Motor Trend's reputation on the line in this one.
I have learned a lot about the entertainment business from the way Porsche reveals information. It's like a very well-controlled movie studio.
Yes.
Where they make you excited and that's smart to make people wait and to not give them. You know, Spike and I are working on this movie, and it's very eagerly anticipated. And I was talking to our producer friend, and he said to me, if I were you, I would say nothing about this to anyone.
Just like Porsche.
Let it just explode and let people see.
Yeah, so don't ask us about our movie, all right? Because we're not going to tell you anything.
I just was about to ask, because now you're getting me interested.
Even though you can see that board over there with the whole movie.
Let's turn that whole thing around on you.
The projector is going to have synthetic fuel. That's all I can tell you.
Andy, before we go, Well, any new guitar acquisitions? Have you bought anything?
Well, the last guitar I did was a 57 Telecaster, which I converted to a Strat layout, which Francis Rossi played one,
and wow.
it's a perfect modifying guitars. It's a perfect replica of the thing that a Status Quo lead guitarist had, and I love it to bits. I'm lacking a little bit of time to play it, but my son is doing it. He's better than me anyway.
What other big American things do you like?
I like everything in America. It would be really my country of choice to live in, to be honest. And I have a Dodge Ram truck sitting in my front row at home, and I love
That's
this
awesome.
Big 5.7 heavy engine, Hemi engine. It gets a supercharger over the winter now.
Oh yeah,
a big one. I have a boat which is American made. It's a Baja. It's a 28 footer with an engine that's too big for the boat, which is good because then it never gets boring.
And does it make you laugh that Jerry Seinfeld is following you guys like a fangirl?
That's an honor.
It scares me sometimes, but it's okay.
Yeah. It's an honor.
He knows about your boats and bikes. It's so great.
He's putting a lot of pressure on us with all our projects. I will be more careful what we are talking about in the future.
Dr. Frank, Andreas Pruninger, Mr. GT, Mr. 911. It's awesome that you guys reached out and said to come on. This has been great. The audience loves having you on, having you back. You're now going to be a returning guest for us. Our audience just loves the Porsche history. Jerry, thank you for coming out and hosting this one. It's really been a fantastic hour.
Really
I learned
fun.
A lot.
Really fun.
Yeah.
These guys are so generous and such. The great thing I think that all the Porsche fans will get out of this show is that they're real enthusiasts.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's why the cars are so good.
Yes, sir.
And we appreciate them.
There you go.
Thanks very much for having
Thank
us.
Thank you very
Let's
much.
Drive some fun. Cars, guys.
Great Let's fun. Drive some cars.
Let's drive some.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio, brought to you by Hangar 56. Listen to new episodes every Wednesday, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.